for today is to finish B'ritz Hashem, the fourth perek, and that's the perek Shoshanogach Dol Vehem, begin the fifth perek, Shoshanogach Es HaPora. So we're here on Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis, towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're going to start with Omar Rav Ada Bar Ava. We've already mentioned the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, and the great paradox of Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that a Shor Muad, all you need is Shmir Pchusa, whereas a Shor Tam requires Shmir Me'ula. So let's focus now on a Shor Muad. He was Shomer the Shor, and he provided a Shmir Pchusa. The Shor went out and damaged. Is the Bailin Potter, Omer Avad Barav, Lo Potter of Yehuda, Elo Tzad Ha'ado Shebo, Aval Tzad Tamus, Bimkomo Medes. We've already had a sugya earlier in the Perek about Tzad Tamus, which means that the Shor HaMuad is not just a new entity called the Shor HaMuad, and the old history, the record of the Shor as a Tam is completely gone and buried, disappeared off the face of the earth. No. The Mu'adus is added on top of the Tamus. And basically, you have in every Shor Mu'ad a combination of a Shor Tam and a Shor Mu'ad in one goof, in one Shor. Therefore, if he was Shomer Shmir Pchusa, well, that's fine as far as the Tzad Mu'ad Shebo, but the Tzad Tamus requires Shmira Mu'ula, because Tzad Tamus Mekom Medes, there's still a Shor Tam that's inherent in the animal. We could have said that half the Shor is a Tam and half the Shor is a Mu'ad, but that's not what we're saying over here. It's not like Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin, Chatzi Tam and Chatzi Mu'ad. The Shor is completely a Mu'ad and all the regulations of Mu'ad kick in, and it's completely a Tam. And the reason I emphasize this is because Rashi says that in the case of Rav Ada Bar Ava, where the Bailim supplied only a Shmir Pchusa, they pay Chatzin Nezik for the Tzad Tamus. It's not that half the Shor is a Tam, which means you pay half of what a Shor Tam would pay, which would be a quarter of a Nezik. No, you pay the, if you could say it, the full Chatzin Nezik, because the Shor is completely a Shor Tam. We'll see later on that not everybody agrees with Rav Ada Bar Ava. The Gemara now says, Omar Rav, Mu'ad lekeren yamin, eino mu'ad lekeren smol. If the animal consistently gores from its right side, then it's not a mu'ad for the left side. And what that means is that maybe because the right side is stronger than the left side, we assume that if on three occasions the pattern is that it gores from the right side, then it's mu'ad on the right side. That's the strong side. Now, what would be in the flip side case? That Rav doesn't address. Namely, let's say the animal was a mu'ad for tzad smol. Would it be a mu'ad l'tzad yamin? So the Meiri actually quotes an opinion, that mu'ad lekeren smol is automatically mu'ad lekeren yamin with a kal v'chomer. If this animal has demonstrated that it gores from its weak side, how much more so would it gore from its strong side, from the yamin side? But most of the mefarshim disagree with this opinion in the Meiri, and we split the shor into two, so to speak. There's the tzad yamin and the tzad smol, and lo karav zel zekal alayl, there's no overlap. If the animal is mu'ad to one side or the other, whichever side that is, it's not mu'ad to the other side. Amri, the Chachomim said, Aliva deman. Let's analyze whether or not this statement of Rav reflects the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Keep in mind, Rabbi Meir requires Shmir Me'ula for both a Shor Tam and a Shor Mu'ad, or the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, Shor Tam requires Shmir Me'ula, whereas in the case of Mu'ad, Sagile, it's sufficient to supply Shmir Pchusa. That's what the Gemara is going to analyze now. I'll leave it in mind. Rashi explains that it was pshita, it was posha to the Gemara, that Rav did not have to be mechadish this din as far as Tashlumin is concerned. We already have a sugya and a mishnah back on Daf Lamed Zayin, if you recall, that Mu'ud li'Adam is not Mu'ud le'Behema. So how much more so, Mu'ud li'Yamin, which is the stronger side, is not Mu'ud le'Small. And therefore, the Gemara assumes that the Chiddush of Rav is vis-a-vis the Chiyuv Shmira. What level of Shmira do the Bailim have to provide? And now the Gemara analyzes. E'alibad, Rabbi Meir requires in all cases Tam and Mu'ud, the higher level of Shmira. Ha'amar Echad Tam Echad Mu'ud Shmira Mu'ula Boy. So if Rav's coming to differentiate between levels of Shmira vis-a-vis Keren Yamin and Keren Smol, because Keren Yamin is Mu'ud and Keren Smol is Tam, then it makes no sense. Rav's not telling me anything because Rabbi Meir requires Shmira Ma'ula whether it's a Tam or it's a Mu'ud. But the truth is, the Gemara says that we're not out in the clear, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why? E aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. And Rav wants to tell me that there are two levels of Shmira that this Shar must be provided with. There's Shmira Pchusa, and so far as on the Keren Yamin side, on the right side, it's a Mu'ud. And then there's Shmira Ma'ula on the left side, because of the status of Tam. Then there's something strange here. Rav wants to tell me that in one single Shar, you could have two different levels of Shmira. My area, Keren Small. Forget about the case of Keren Small, where you divided up the Shar into a Shem Mu'ud, Shem Tam, because of Keren Yamin, Keren Smol. Afilu be Keren Yamin, even with regard to Keren Yamin, Nami isbeit sad tamus vitzbeit sad mu'adus. As we've said before, even in the case of a mu'ad, the tamus still exists. The Shem Tam is not poka, and that means that sad tamus bimkoma omedes. And therefore, in general, when you have a Shar Tam, does the Shar Tam require Shmir Ma'ula, Shmir Pchusa, according to Yehuda? The answer is that Enochinami, even though it's a Shar Tam, it's going to require Shmir Ma'ula insofar as it's also a Tzad Tam. So the Gemara says, Amri Liolim Krab Yehuda, Enochinami Rav is presenting his thesis within the context, standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Yehuda, but Velo Svirle de Rav Ada Bar Ava. He never accepted the principle that we just formulated according to Rav Ada Bar Ava, that Sad Tamus Bimkomo Omedes Vachi Kama Rav. Rav is basically saying that if you have a Shor Mu'ud, and it's Nogeach, you know, Bein Bitzad Yamin, Bein Bitzad Small, it doesn't make a difference, then Enochinami, it's a Mu'ud, and all you have to do is provide Shmir Pchus, and then you potter and Gansen, you don't pay a thing. Oh, but Hachi Kama, here's what Rav wants to be Mechadish. Ki Hai Gavna, I have one case where one single Shor could be both a Tam and require Shmir Ma'ula and a Mu'ud at the same time, and Sagi Lebe Pchusa. To Mishkachas Bey, Tzad Tamus Umu'adus. We have in one single Shor both a Tzad Tam and a Tzad Mu'ud. And why is that so? Because the animal gores with its right side, that engenders a din of Mu'ud li'Yamin. It has no track record of goring from its left side, and therefore it's a Tam le'inyan smol. Says Rav, here's a case where you have both a Tzad Tamus and a Tzad Mu'adus. And therefore, if he was Shomer Shmir Pchusa, well, we have to check out what happened. If the Hezek took place by Keren Yamin, then he's Potter, because Rabbi Yehuda says it's enough to supply Shmir Pchusa as far as a Mu'ud is concerned. If on the other hand it's a Mu'ud, if on the other hand the Shar, after providing Shmir Pchusa, went out and was Mazik, it was Nogeach Bitzad Smol, then he would have to pay Chatzi Nezek like a Shar Tam. So it's fascinating that in one Shar, Rav agrees you could have both a halach of Shmir Mu'ula and a Shmir Pchusa, insofar as a negicha b'tzad yamin took place, then the shmir b'chusa was sufficient. He doesn't pay a dime. If, on the other hand, the shar was nogech b'tzad smol, insofar as it has a din of tam, and he only supplied shmir b'chusa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's going to be chayev chatzi nezek. Avol muad legamri. Here we look on daf mem vavam and aleph. You had a case of a shar that is nogeh both on the right side and the left side. It's fully muad. Lo mishkaches be litzad tamus klal. There is no chiyuv chatzi nezek b'toras tam. Either it's nezek shalem or it's nothing. If he did no shmir, he would pay nezek shalem b'toras muad. If, on the other hand, he provided shmir p'chusa, he pays nothing whatsoever, because the tzad tamus doesn't exist at all. It's completely dead and buried. So we don't say tzad tamus when the shar is a shar muad. That's the shitas rav. The Magid Mishnah in Hilchas Nizkei Mammon, Perek Zayin Halacha Beis, claims that the Rambam has a unique shita here in understanding the shita of Rav, and he accepts the shita of Rav Halacha, and that is that according to the Rambam shita, the shar could not be both a tam and muad at the same time. If it becomes a muad lekeren yamin, for example, then the shame tamus is not batel, and you cannot take a shame muad and divide it in half and say that, you know, the shame muad could bechelka be mafkia the shame tam. In other words, if the shor is not completely muad, it can't be mafkia the shame tam, and the shor remains the shame tam. That's how the Rambam learns the shita. So it's not like what we said before, going to Rashi and other Rishonim, that if he was shomer shmir p'chusa, then he's potter from the tzad, from the if the animal was no gech b'tzad yamin. According to the Rambam, even if the animal was no gech b'tzad yamin, and it was muad li yamin, nevertheless you only pay chatzi nezek. So whether or not the shor was no gech b'tzad yamin or b'tzad smol, you always pay maximum chatzi nezek. That's the shita of Rambam. So the chiyuv of chatzi nezek, if he for example supplies a shmir p'chusa, will apply even b'keren yamin. Not like what we said before, that if he was nogeach b'keren yamin, he's pot, he doesn't pay a dime. The Rambam holds that if he was nogeach b'keren yamin, even though he supplied the shor with a shmir p'chusa, nevertheless he pays chatzi nezek, because the tzad muadus, which is only a part tzad, because it's only yamin, it's only muad l'gab yamin, is not enough to be mafkir the shem tam. And therefore, even if it was nogeach b'keren yamin, and he supplied a shmir p'chusa, he pays chatzi nezek b'toras tam, because the animal still has the overall status of a tam. And that's because until the animal proves itself to be nogeach on all sides, in general, then it becomes a muad legamri. But up until that point, when it's only muad for one side, that muad, which is partial, it's only a fragmented muadus. A fragmented partial muadus doesn't have the power to undermine the state of tamus, and therefore the shor remains a shor tam. So if it's no gaf, but even b'keren yamin, where it was muad b'keren yamin, since it was only a partial and fragmented muadus, therefore it remains a shor tam, you pay chatzi nezek. The other rishonim would say that if the shor was no gaf b'tzad yamin, then you pay nezek sholem. Now, back in the Mishnah, at the end of our Mishnah, we had a presentation here, a formulation of Rabbi Eliezer, Ein lo shmira elisakin. So the Gemara now clarifies, what's the din according to Rabbi Eliezer? First, we want to know, where does Rabbi Eliezer get this halacha from? Ein lo shmira elisakin. That the shor muad has to be put to death, so to speak. Amar Rabba, my taima to Rabbi Eliezer, the Amakra, in the parash of Muad, the Torah says, V'yimshar nagachu mitmol shilshom, v'hu ad bibola, v'lo yishmerenu. And what does it mean, v'lo yishmeren? We understood v'lo yishmeren, and the Bailam would not shomer it, before. It's describing an action, or in this case, a non-action. Rabbi Eliezer understood it differently. Shuv ein lo shmira l'zeh, once the shor became a shor nakhon, a shor muad, is there's no shmira. And therefore, the only thing you can do with this animal is shecht it, because otherwise he's going to incur all the liabilities and all the losses to pay compensation to all the nizakim, the nizikim. It means that according to Rabbah, in Rabbi Eliezer's frame of reference, even if he were to supply the most supreme level of Shmira, Shmira Ma'ula Plus, nevertheless he would remain Chayev, because the Torah says, V'lo Yishmerenu, there is no Shmira. V'lo Yishmerenu has nothing to do with the Gavra, as to whether the Gavra did or did not implement his Pu'ulas Shmira, but rather has to do with the Cheftza. V'lo Yishmerenu means there ain't no way under the sun that you could provide Shmira for a shor muad. Amalei Sabai asks Rabba, Ela Me'at, if this be the case, let's look at Bar. In the parasha of Bar, Dichsiv, V'lo Yechasenu, maybe V'lo Yechasenu means, Nami Shuv Ein Lo Kisui L'zeh, that the Bar is Mufka from Shmira, Mufka from Kisui. V'chitei Machinami, and if you'll say that that's really so, and the only way that he could be potter for a Bar is if he would remove the bar, but as long as the bar exists, even though he puts a covering on it, that's not considered shmira. V'atanan, we have a Mishnah, kiso karoi, that if he covers the bar still exists, he covers the bar, and he did not violate v'lo yishmerenu, that's a double negative, is v'nafal sham sharcham or meis potter. It means, why is he chayv? The Torah says, because v'lo yechasenu, here he covered the bar, and he is potur. So now we have a stira, says Abaye, between the way you, Rabbah, understand Rabbi Eliezer's understanding of the pasuk, and you cannot be consistent with that because applying that same understanding to the case of Bar, v'lo yichasenu means it's mufka from kisui, just like you said v'lo yishmeru means mufka from shmira. So why does the Mishnah say that if you were machas of the bar, in fact you are patur? El Amar Abayi says you have to find a different explanation for Rabbi Eliezer and a source for Rabbi Eliezer. Any time in Rabbi Eliezer, Kirisanya, as the Brisa says, not in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, but the name of Rabbi Nosson, but it's the same sheet as Rabbi Eliezer. Minayin shelo yigadel adam kelev rabasoch beso. Ve'al yamid sulam ra'ua besoch beso. What's the scriptural source that enjoins a person from keeping a dangerous animal in his house? In this case, a kelev ra. You know, I was always wondering if a kelev ra might be a kelev that's not, let's say, attacking human beings necessarily, but scares the living daylights out of human beings. Maybe that's itself as a kelev ra. Anyway, he's not allowed to have a sulam ra'ua besof beso, a ladder that's faulty, that's weak, somebody could climb and kill himself on it. Shenemar, because the Torah says, v'lo sasim damin beveisecha. This is in the parish of Makeh. The Torah says, ki sivne bayis chadosh v'yasisa makeh l'gagecha, v'lo tasim damin beveisecha. And that means that you can't leave around anything dangerous in your house. For example, if you have a roof and you left out the makeh, the wall, the fence around the top of the roof, somebody might fall off. And the same thing applies. Somebody might fall down a faulty ladder. Somebody might be injured by a kelev ra. And that's why, according to the shita of Rabbi Eliezer and our Mishnah, once the shor has established itself as a shor muad, it's got a dangerous status. It attacks and kills. We've got to get rid of it. Just like we have to get rid of a kelev ra, and we have to get rid of a sulam ra'ua. As the Torah says, lo tosim dom ve'secha, and therefore, ein lo shmira ela besakin. If you look at Rashi, dibar maskel shlo yigdal, shlo yigadol odom, Rashi quotes the pasuk v'lo yishmerenu. And that's a little bit strange, because this Rashi is going on Rabbi Nosson in the Brisa, and Rabbi Nosson bases this Isur of Kelev Rabatok based on the Pasuk, Lo Sosim Dom Veisecha. So why does Rashi need to quote the Pasuk, v'lo yishmerenu. And some of the Rishonim want to offer an answer, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, that a kelev ra is a very extreme kind of case, so is a sulam ra'ua. The case of a shor hamur is not as extreme as that, not as dangerous, and therefore we need an extra posuk that reveals that a shor mur is in the parsha of lo sasim damim beveisach, and that's the posuk of lo yishmerenu in the parsha of shor. Of Shor HaMu'ot. Now, who argues with Rabbi Nosson? I mean, we don't really have a source for someone who doesn't hold like Rabbi Nosson, but yet we find in the Mishnah that there is Shmira according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda for a Shor HaMu'ot. Not like Rabbi Eliezer who says, well, there's no possibility because you have an Easter, you have to get rid of it. It comes under Lo Tosim Dom Veisecha. So it would seem that those who argue with Rabbi Nosson, they might be saying that, you know what, as far as financial liability is concerned, you can provide Shmira for Shartam and Sharmuad as well, even Sharmuad. And you'll be potter if you provide that level of Shmira, whether it's Me'ula, Shmira Pchusa, Shmira Me'ula, Markedisli, you'll be potter for damages. But they agree to this drasha of Lo Yigadel Odom Kelev Rabasov Beso, and therefore there is, shall we say, a Tzvei Dinim here. There are two dimensions. There's a question of financial responsibility, liability, and there's the issue of moral and halakhic responsibility in terms of fulfilling the mitzvahs of Hashem. So in a case of a dovar shehezeko motzui, something as dangerous as a kelev ra and a suam ra'ua, then for sure you violate a lav of lo tosim dom veisecha by leaving these dangerous things around. The Me'iri seems to add to the list of Kelev Rabasov Beso and Sulam Ra'ua, he adds Kol Dover Shezeko Matsui. That's the language of the Me'iri. And maybe when he adds here Dover Shezeko Matsui, he's trying to tell you what's the lowest common denominator here that defines Lo Tosim Dom Veisecha, Kelev Ra, and Sulam Ra'ua. That's called Dover Matsui. But let's say, for example, you had a Dover She'eno Matsui. Hezeko is Eno Matsui. Let's say, for example, a Shor Mu'ud. I don't know if that's called Hezeko Matsui. Is that the Shor is always goring out there, you know, like Kelev Ra? And therefore, the Me'iri might be implying that you're allowed to leave a shor hamuad, which is ein hezeko matsui, in your possession. But what's important to point out is that Tosfos here on Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph, Dibar Maschil El Taima, investigates the following question. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if let's say the owner of this shor hamuad did not live up to his responsibility and slaughter the animal, does he have to pay? And Tosfos suggests that maybe he violates the law of Lo Tosim Dom Veisecha, but he's potter mi l'shalim if he provided the highest level of Shmira. And although Tosfos is not convinced and sure about it, but nevertheless it's logical to say that v'lo yishmerenu is chal in all nizkei mamon. The law of Lo Tosim Domim Veisecha, that's chal only with relationship to the life of a human being. Lo Tosim Domim, the word Domim means don't jeopardize the life of a human being. V'lo Yishmerenu primarily is focused on Nizkei Mamon, which means prevent damages to other people's possessions. And therefore, it would be logical to say that with regard to lotosim dom ve'secha, that would mean if you had something which would endanger the life of a human being, I'm not sure where you would place Sharamuah. Sharamuah means it was Nogeach other Shvarim on three consistent occasions. It hasn't yet been Nogeach and Adam B'Pashtus, because then we would put the Shar to death. And therefore, perhaps, the Parsha of Lotosim Dom Ve'Secha would not apply and extend in its scope to include a Sharamuah. That's what we wanted to be Medayik also from Tosis Rabbeinu Peretz, also from the Meiri. The Rush in Simon Chaf, in the first perek of Baba Kama, vacillates back and forth. Imishamtinon avor Sharamuah lebehema, o lo mishamtinon. There's halacha of mishamtinon, which would be incurred by a violation of a law. We put a person into a kind of a cherem nidui situation, what's called a shamta. And if a person keeps a sharamuad in his house, do we zap him with a shamta? The Rush vacillates back and forth. Since in the case of a sharamuad, if in the worst case scenario goes out and it damages, he will pay for that. So maybe he doesn't deserve a shamta for keeping it around. He's willing to pay if there are damages. But it sounds like, according to the Rush, the Isur Lava Lotosim Dom Ve'Secha is not chal at all with regard to Nizkei Mamon. And it's only chal vis-a-vis a shar that endangers the life of a person. The Gemara, back on Daf Tesvav Amid Beis, speaks about Kalba Diachal Imri. And the Gemara says that there's a lava of lotosim. And the reason for that is because this shinui of a kelev that eats a sheep is such a great shinui. It exceeds way beyond the shinui of a sharamuad. And therefore, the lav of lotosin dom ve'secha would apply here. But in Keren the Alma, in a general case of Keren, it would sound like, according to the Gemara on Daf Tesvav, there is no lav of lotosin dom ve'secha. In other words, this kelev that the Gemara is describing, that starts up with bigger animals, like a sheep, is a very dangerous animal, and maybe we would assume that it might attack a human being and jeopardize a human life. And therefore, there's a violation of the law of lotosim damim ve'secha. I emphasize the word damim. But indeed, as far as a sharmua that was mazik and damages nechasim, I mean mamon of another person, that doesn't come under lotosim damim ve'secha. However, again, all this is true, l'maskon and l'alocha. I don't know how this impacts on Rabbi Nosson, or more specifically on Rabbi Eliezer, who says, ein lo shmir el asakin. Rabbi Eliezer apparently says that even though a shar that's mu'ud l'beim is not mu'ud li'adam, but nevertheless there's already reason to suspect that this shar might go haywire, might go wild, and even attack a human being. And that's enough to engender the halach of lotosim dom ve'secha. That's the impression you get. And just to leave the question again unresolved, what would be, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if the shar mu'ud goes out and damages, and he provided the best shmir you could possibly provide, would there be a chiyuv tashlumen, or simply Rabbi Eliezer talking about the focused on the moral element in the violation of the law of lotosim dom ve'sech? That remains an unclear issue in this sugya. And now, Be'ezer Hashem, we're ready to start the fifth perek, Shar Shanoga Sapor, but first, a bit of introductory material. This Mishnah, at the very beginning of the fourth perek, is going to discuss... at the very beginning of the fifth perek is going to discuss first and foremost, issues that deal with Safek Mamon. We don't know if the Shor was Mazik. The owner of the Shor and the Nizak are fighting this out. We have also a case of a Parah that gored, and is a Safek whether or not the Vlad was also part of the Hezek. And once again, there's going to be a controversy, a dinu dvarim between two litigants here, the Baal HaVlad and the Nizak. And the Gemara is going to explain the principles of Mamon HaMutal B'Safek, according to Sumchus, and according to the Chachamim, Amotz Mechel Raya, Shor Shenogach Es HaPora, a shor gored a cow that was pregnant, and the witnesses testify on the Negicha, but they were a little bit distant. And after the Negicha, Nimtza Ubra Betzida, they find that the Vlad is, the Ubar is dead, and we're not sure. Eni Yadua, Im Ad Shalom Nagcha Yolda, was the birth before the Negicha, which means if the par gave birth before the Negicha, then the Uber died, but had nothing to do with the Negicha, or as a result of the impact of the goring, that's where the para was injured in such a way that it lost its Uber. And therefore, we don't know what's the story with the Nizak. Does he collect damages? The owner of the para, does he have rights to collect damages even for the Uber? And the Gemara in Bava Basra on Daf Tzadi Gimel explains this suffix in the Mishnah based on Shmuel. Shmuel says, Ein holchim b'momen achar rov. And even though most paros do not lose their vlad, and here all of a sudden we're assuming that the par may have lost its vlad, so that according to Shmuel, it really seems more likely that this suffix is a result of the fact, or is despite the fact that the rove exists, because Shmuel is of the opinion that we have to neutralize the power of a rove to be motzi moments. So even though the Nizak and his claim for damages, not only on the parah but also on the ubar, is supported by the rove, nevertheless, it remains a suffix, and ein holchim b'momen achar rov. Rav, on the other hand, is of the opinion that holchim b'momen achar rov. And the Gemara there in Bava Basra explains that we shouldn't say that the suffix is perhaps the para lost its ubar independent of the, or without any cause or connection to the impact of the goring, but rather the suffix is perhaps when the shor was just about to attack the para, and the shor is a very awesome, you know, frightening animal, and it's about to pounce on the para, the pachad, the fear that the para was in, is what caused it to lose its vlad. And that's called Grumma ben Ezekin, and Grumma ben Ezekin is potter. Or should we say no, that the hapola was a result, a direct result of the negicha, and that's Momen HaMazik, that's Shor HaMazik, and therefore the Nizik has a right to collect damages not only for the Para, but also for the Ubar itself. The Meiri makes a comment that if there are no Edim here whatsoever, then certainly the Baal HaShor is Potter for paying even on the Para itself. And why is that? The Gemara records back on Daf Tesvav a machlokas amoroim as far as the din of shartam, whether or not a shartam is a knas, chatzin as a knas, or it's mamon. And la halacha, we paskin both in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that palgudin iska knasa. So if there are no edim that witness the negicha, then the Baal HaShor is completely potur, even for the par itself, because of modu b'knas potur. Let's return to the Mishnah. What's the psak in this case? Mishalim chatzi nezek leparah u'reviya nezek levlad. So the Baal HaShor, the Baal HaMasik, has to pay Chatzi Nezek, as far as the Par is concerned. So we're talking about a Shor Tam. And as far as the Vlad is concerned, since we have a Suffolk on the Vlad, which is a Suffolk on the Chatzi Nezek, with regard to the Par itself, we have a Vadai, and that's Chatzi Nezek. With regard to the Vlad, we have a situation where the controversy is over the Chatzi Nezek, and therefore, to split the Chatzi Nezek into two parts, we pay a Reva Nezek for the Vlad. Now, if you hold that Palga Deniska Knosso, which we said that reflects itself in the poskim, and the Shor Tam really is Potter, the Torah introduced the Knas, that in the case of a Nezek of a Tam, you pay Chatzi Nezek. If the Edim did not see that the Negicha of the Shor was on the Vlad, they only saw it from a distance, then all we have is the Odas Baldin of the Mazik, and therefore there should be a Ptur of Modu Beknas Potter. And the Marsha explains, based on this Tosis Dibri Maskil De Afilu, that the Edim saw the Shor Nogeach the Para, and that itself generates an Umdana, an assumption, circumstantial evidence, that in all likelihood the Para lost its Vlad because of that Negich of the Shor. And even if the Baal HaShor is not willing to admit that that is the case, and therefore we wouldn't be Mechayev him based on Umdana, but nevertheless, because there is such an Umdana, there's no din of Modu V'Knas Potter. In other words, the Baal HaShor, even though it's his Hodah, that's not called Modu V'Knas, because the real Mechayev is based on the Umdana. We just need the clincher, namely his Hodah. Rabbi Kivega has a whole different approach. He wants to say that immediately when the Edom saw the Negichas HaPara, that itself engenders a Suffolk in Bezdin, lest the Para lost its Vlad because of the Negicha. And if there is a Suffolk in Bezdin, then Sumchus is of the opinion Cholkim, and therefore the Chiyuv here on the Vlad is not because of Hodah Spaldin of the Baal HaShor, but rather because of the Suffolk that was engendered by the Edim, and Sumchus now kicks in with Maman Amutal B'Suffolk Cholkin. But be that as it may, getting back to the Mishnah for a moment, the Mishnah says that as far as the Vlad is concerned, there's going to be a payment of the Baal HaShor for the Uber, for the Vlad of Reva Nezek. And the sugi later on of Rav on Daf Mem Zayin is going to address a different question where we want to evaluate Reva Nezek with regard to the Vlad. How do we evaluate the value of the Vlad? Do we find out how much in the market they would pay for this Vlad? And the Rav is of the opinion, no. What we do is we evaluate the Para, how much it was worth as a pregnant Para, and how much it's worth now that it doesn't have the Vlad anymore. And that's the difference, and that establishes the Dmei Vlad. Now, everything we've been discussing now is a Shor Muad. I'm sorry, it's a Shor Tam. The Meiri wants to know what would be the din if the Shor was in fact a Shor Muad. As far as the Para is concerned, clearly the Baal HaShor would have to pay full compensation on the Para. That's a Shor Muad, Nezek Shalem. And as far as the Vlad is concerned, says the Meiri, the Baal HaShor would pay Chatzi Nezek. Now the Mishnah continues, V'chein Para Shenogcha Es HaShor. We have an opposite case here with the Para now becomes the aggressor, attacking a Shor, as it were. V'nimtza v'lada b'tzida. Now we find that the Vlad of the Para lies dead on its side, on the side of the Para. Now the halach of Shor Tam, of course, as we've discussed numerous occasions, is that mishtalimi gufe. And now the question is, let's say in a case where the Chatzi Nezek exceeds beyond the worth of the para. So the chatz, let's say the shor was worth 500, the paras were 200, and chatzi nezek of the shor is 250, that goes beyond the value of the para. And the question is, can the Baal Hashar, meaning the Nizak, collect from the Gufo Shel Para, including the Vlad itself? And the answer is, the Mishnah establishes later on, and we're going to see this also hinted in the Mishnah back on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis, that in such a case, he's not able to collect, meaning the Nizak, the Baal Hashar, more than and above the value of Gufo. Now, when we say Gufo, what does that mean? Does that mean, obviously, as we've seen over and over again, Shartam collects me Gufo of the Masik, but what is the Gufo in this case? Does it include the higher value, which means the Shart together with the Ubar, or the lower value of the Shart without the Ubar? Well, I said Shart, I really mean Para, sorry. So the Mishnah says, "Ein yaduim ad shlo nagcha yolda imish nagcha yolda." At what moment in time did this negicha happen? Was it before she lost the para, lost the vlad, or not? So it could be that the para was yolda before the negicha. In such case, the only wherewithal that the Baal Hashar has as the nizik to collect would be from the shar itself. Or is it possible that at the time of the negicha, the para was still pregnant, and the leida took place after the negicha? Since at the time of the negicha, the animal, the para, was still pregnant, is mishtalim chatzi nezek min hapara u'revia nezek min havlad. Well, again, we're going to have to say is the following. As far as the para is concerned, the Baal Hashar, the nezek, has right to collect his chatzi nezek from the gufa shel para. But if that's not enough, because the loss to the shar exceeds even the chatzi nezek of the loss of the shar exceeds the value of the para, then can the Baal Hashar have rights to collect some of the damages from the vlad? Well, again, we have a suffix here. Therefore, let him collect revia nezek min vlad. And the Gemara later on is going to ask the question, why does the Baal Hashar collect 3/4 of the nezek, meaning chatzi nezek for the para, and reva nezek min havlad? That doesn't seem logical. That the simple, straightforward reading of the Mishnah, u'revia nezek min havlad, implies that above and beyond the chatzi nezek, let's say the shar was worth 500 and it collects 250 as chatzi nezek, you add another revia nezek, and you collect that from the vlad, which means sach hakol, the nizak is collecting 3/4 of his nezek. We never had such a halach in tam. And to reinterpret the Mishnah, we're going to see in Mirtz Hashem on Amud Beis the machlokas between Abaye and Rav. The Gemara asks, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, Zo divrei sumchus, di Amar mamon amuto besafek, Cholkim av l'chachomim omrim zekal gadol b'din hamotzim chavel of araya. How could this Mishnah paskin consistently that in the case of a safek we're going to split it in half? That only makes sense according to sumchus. The chachomim hold hamotzim chavel of araya, and if the nisa can't prove that in fact the hezek took place, that the hezek of his Ubar was caused by the Mazik, then he should have no ability whatsoever to collect even a dime as far as that suffix is concerned, vis-a-vis the Vlad. If the Nizak cannot prove his case based on Edim, then he loses out. Hamotzim Chavel Araya. And in our Mishnah, even though the Shar is not located physically in the Rishus of the Baal Hashar, the Shar Mazik, and that we know from the Sugyan Bab Metzia Daf Kuf, that Sumchus says Yachloku in the case of Omeris Ba'agam, which means that the shor is not in the reshus of the Baal HaShor. Nevertheless, Tosus quotes the Gemara, the nukmi b'cheskes marakama, that there's another type of chazaka, not a cheskes moment where you're possessing the moment, but rather the fact that this shor was yours before, and now if somebody wants to take this shor out of your possession, in this case the nizak, let's say in a short time, wants to take the shor, then all of haraya. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, says Rabbi Yudom Shmuel, there would be a p'tur for the vlad as far as the mazik is concerned, meaning till the nizak can prove and establish that he has rights to collect for his vlad, the vlad of the par and the resha, then he loses out. And the Gemara is so convinced of the logic of Rabbi Yudom Shmuel, the Gemara says lama li lemeimar. You're telling me Zeklal Godel Bedin that Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, this is a major principle of the faith that Hamotz Mechal of Araya. I mean, why did you have to get so dramatic about it? I mean, just point out that Hamotz Mechal of Araya, that's it. We're not going to say Yachloku. The Nizek has the burden of proof. So the Gemara says, Lomali Lameimar. Now I said that Lomali Lameimar is really a question on Rabbi Yudom Shmuel. More logically, I think, Rabbi Yudom Shmuel were only quoting the Chachamim as they appear in various Mishnayos in Shas. And they say that Zeklal Godel Bedin. And the question is, why did they have to add this dramatic flair of Zeklal Godel Bedin? Itzrich. The Mishnah says Zekal Gol Bedin, not here but elsewhere, Dafil to teach me a chiddush, Nizak Omer Bari Vamazik Omer Shema. Is Hamotzi Mechavel of Haraya? The Nizak is the Tovea, he's absolutely sure that the loss of the Vlad was a result of the Negicha, and he has rights to collect not only for the Shor HaNizak, but also for the Vlad. Whereas the Mazik himself, the owner of the Shor, has doubts about it. He has no clue. Did the cow, the victim cow, give birth before the Negicha or after the Negicha? Nevertheless, even though the Muchzakus of the Mazik is somewhat weak, and we spoke about the concept of Hura Kocho, his chazok is weak because he himself is a Tainas Shema. Nevertheless, we still apply the principle of Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Haraya. Tosus here, Dimra Maskla Filu wants to know, can we apply the principle of Modu Mimiktas? After all, the Baal HaShor is Modu on the Nezek of the Parah. He's denying the nezek of the Parah's Vlad. He's chayev by his own avish to pay part of the claim, but not the other half of the claim. He should be mechuyev shvua dorais of shvuas modu b'miktsas. And that itself is only half a kasha. The punchline of this kasha is that we have a principle in the Gemara and Shvuas on Daf Mem Zayin that miche niyochel ishova mishalim. If he cannot take the shvua, then he has to pay. And here in this case of the Baal HaShor, Modu Miktas, he's a Toein Shema. That's what we saw in the Gemara. Then he can't take a Shvua. And either you're going to have to say that Shmuel, of our Sugya, doesn't hold from the din of any Yochel Shavim Mishalim, and that's clear in the Gemara in Shvuas. Or you're going to say that Mechuyev Shvua, any Yochel Shavim Mishalim, that's only in a case where he is Modeh. He admits that he's chayev. But if, on the other hand, even if he would admit he would still be patur, then ain't a mishalim. In other words, here, that we're talking about a case of palgan and iska knasa, which means if he would be modi, he'd be patur. Therefore, we don't say ain't a yochel ishava mishalim. The goal of the Torah, by imposing a shvu, was to evoke a hodah. He doesn't want to take the shvuah, so he'll admit. But here, if he'll admit, he'll be potter anyway, because modu b'knas is potter if you hold palgan and iska knasa. Tosus also adds another approach. It could be that the din of mechuyev shvuah v'ani ochli shav meshalim is only in a case where he's somewhat guilty, in a sense. In other words, he should know whether he's chayev or not, and now he doesn't know and he can't take the shvuah. But here in this case, there's no reason why we should assume that the Baal HaShor up front should know whether the parah gave birth before the negicha or after the negicha. And therefore his taina is a perfectly good taina. And even though he's mechuyev shvuah yochli shavah, and he's eni yochli shavah, he still is potter. But Tosus asks a more fundamental question. The Gemara seems to assume that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of Bari V'Shema Bari Adif. And even though the Nizak is being toyin a tainus Bari, he cannot force the Baal HaShor to pay, Amotzi Mechal V'Raya, even though the Baal HaShor, the Nitba, is a tainus Shema. And later on, at the end of Bava Kama, and also in Bava Metzira, Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says, Manali Biyadcha. And the Nitba says, Eni Odeh Chayev, because Bari V'Shema Bari Adif. And here's where Tosus comes up with his fantastical Chiddush, which is all over the place, that Bari V'Shema Bari Adif only applies when the Bari is very good and the Shema is very bad. Like, for example, if a person says Manali Biyadcha, and a person doesn't usually have the Hazas Panim to demand and say to someone, hey, you lent me $1,000, that's a Bari Tov. The Nitba says, I don't know whether I borrowed this money. That's a Bari Garua. That's where Rabbi Yehuda says Bari V'Shema Bari Ad. But here, in this case, where the Nitba, meaning the Baal HaShor, the Mazik, says, I don't know about the Parah. I mean, I don't know about the Uber or the Parah. That's a Bari Tov. I'm sorry, that's a Shema Tov. Inami. Now the Gemara gives another explanation for this very dramatic phrase in the Chachamim, Zeklal Godol Bedin. L'chiha de'itmar, it's indicating something which we learned about Hamocher Shor L'chaver V'nimtza Naghan. That Hamotzim Mechavel of Araya is very, very powerful. A person sells a shor, and presumably the buyer, the purchaser, was interested in using the shor as a work animal for harisha. And it turns out that this animal is a naghan, and that was true even before the mechira, but the lokeach, the buyer, was unaware of that fact. In any event, in the case of a naghan, you don't use a naghan for harisha. What you do is you shecht it. And the buyer says, I never bought this shor for purposes of meat. I bought it for purposes of harisha. And yet, we're not so sure that the lokech has a right to back out of this deal. Rav Omar, Enochinami, the lokech has a right to be mevatel this mekach, ze mekach tos. And therefore, the mocher has to give back the mos that he took from the lokeach. The lokeach gives back the shor and fartek ha'maisa. And the reason for this is because most people, when they buy a shor, the presumption is that they buy it for harisha. But Shmuel Amar, yachal sheyomer lo l'shchita machartiv l'cha. The mocher has a right to defend himself against the argument of the lokeach and say, you know what, I sold it to you for its meat value. Why? Because in a certain minimum minority case, Miut b'nei Adam, they buy shvarim for the purpose of meat, for shchita. Now, even though the lokech has a strong rove to support his claim that he bought it for harisha, this is not what he wanted, this is a mekach tos here. Nevertheless, Shmuel says we still insist on the principle of hamotzi mechavel of araya. And the lokech does not have the ability to get his money back and cancel the mekach. That's Zeklal Godol Bedin. Zeklal Godol Bedin means the Muchzakus is so powerful that it overrides a Rove. And even though in most cases we have a principle that says Ruba Chazaka Ruba Adif, Rove is stronger than a Rove, than a Chazaka, and it trumps a Chazaka, but nevertheless the exception is Muchzakus in Dini Mamanos. There, the halacha is Ein holchim b'mamanachar rov is not strong enough to to trump a cheskas mamon. Let's just add quickly 2 points. One of the Tosa Rush, and he wants to know Rav Shita. Rav doesn't pay any attention to the miut. He puts all the emphasis on the rov. The question is, this miut is supported by a chazaka. When you gather together the forces and you add the chazaka with the miut, that should be a race on the rov and overcome the rov. And the answer is, says the Tosa Rush, that this chazaka itself is a little bit weak, because when you sell something, sometimes lokech is muchzak, even before he paid for it, sometimes the mocher is muchzak, because lokech paid him already. This chazaka itself is a weak chazaka, and it doesn't link up with the rov in order to undermine, with the miut, excuse me, in order to undermine the power of the rov. Another point that I wanted to make is the Rashbam in Bava Basra claims that even Sumchus would agree that Ein Holchim Mamon Achar Rov, and the Cheskas Mamon trumps the Rov. Here it's a very unique case, because in Shoshin Orgas HaParav and Imtza Ubra B'tzida, even Bezdin doesn't know up front exactly what happened over here. Did the par give birth before the Negicha or after the Negicha? That's where Sumchus says Yachloku. There was already a suffix in Bezdin that was generated by the Maisa. But in the case of the Mocher Shar, Vinibsa Nagchan, we know exactly what happened, and we know that the Mocher didn't specify whether he's giving it for this purpose or that purpose. Lokech didn't specify why he bought it. In this case, Sumchus would be Mode that the Halach is with the Mocher because he's Muchsak. Now the Gemara asks Akasha, Amai, why do we find this machlok between Rav and Shmuel? Whether we rely on the Rov against the Muchzok or on the Muchzokus to trump the Rov, why don't we just clarify this? There's such a simple way of clarifying. V'nechse igavra dezovin l'radya, igavra dezovin l'nichse sof. A man is a farmer, then for sure we have to assume he buys an ox to plow his field. If on the other hand, the person is, let's say, a tabach, meaning a butcher, he needs the shor for shechita purposes. So why are we in doubt here? Lo tzricha, the Gemara says, we're talking about a person who wears two hats. He's a farmer, he works the land, and he's also a tabach. And he shechts animals, and he sells its meat. Therefore, this man is ragil to buy shvarim for charisha and shvarim for shechita. There's no way we can prove, based on his behavior pattern, exactly why he bought the shor. But the very premise of this sugya is that when you can check something out, then we don't have to rely on rov or not rov. Let's just check it out and see where this person, where he fits in. According to most Rishonim, and this is paskind, even in Shulchan Aruch, if the mocher does not recognize lokech, he doesn't know him from a hole in the wall, even if the lokeach needs the shor for charisha, then it's not a mekatos. The mocher doesn't know that the lokeach is buying it for charisha. If the mocher doesn't recognize lokeach, he's never seen him before, he doesn't know whether he's a farmer or a butcher, then it was lokeach's responsibility to spell out that he wants to buy it for charisha. The mocher doesn't have to assume up front that he's selling this shor to a baal sodas, a baal adoma, to a farmer. And therefore, even though the general minog of buying for this or buying for that is undermined by the unique situation of lokeach and his profession, etc., etc., but we don't have to pay attention to his unique profession unless he went out of his way to point this out. And you'll see this also in the Rashbam, which is quoted by the Beis Yosef in Choshen Mishpat, that he says, Kevin Shalom Pirej, since the buyer didn't spell out explicitly that he's buying it for Harisha purposes, Hareyu ke Adam Hakone Gam leCharisha veGam leShechita. By default, he puts himself into this general category of people who wear many hats and they buy sometimes for this, sometimes for that. The Afshe Bemet, in truth, Min Hagel Liknos Rak leCharisha, he doesn't fit into that ambidextrous category. He only buys for Harisha. But Achshav Nisbatel Minhago, his minhag is not Koveya. And what we're going to say is that he didn't buy Kiminhago, he bought whether it's for Harisha or for Shechita. Because otherwise he would have had to spell it out. He would have had to stipulate it. The Rashbam also points out something else, and that is that the kavana of the socher who purchased the shvarim kedei lemochen lacherim, he's kona shvarim amyodim lacharisha v'gam shvarim amyodim l'shchita, meaning this middleman very often will buy for both types. So there's another case of a kona lokeach that buys for both types, for charisha and for shchita. Now the Gemara asks a different question. Even if you'll grant me that the reason why Ein Holchim B'Momen Achar Rov is because this person could buy both for Shechita and for Harisha, there's still another easy way of checking out what he bought and what he intended to buy. Id Mei Raja, isn't there a fluctuation in price? You have a shor that is a work shor. I mean, it still could be shechted later on, but in the meantime, gain years of work from the shor. That's a shor l'raja. It's worth, I don't know, twice as much as a shor for shechita. V'id mei nichsecha, or did he pay the value of the market value of a shor that's for shechita, which is much cheaper? L'nichsecha, the Gemara answers, lo tzricha di okir bisra v'koy b'dmei raja. There's a tremendous demand in the market at this particular pace, a point in time, for bisra, for meat. There's not enough meat around, not enough shechita that took place. And therefore, the value of the shor for basar went up, and it now levels itself off. It's equivalent to the value, the market value of a shor for shechita. Amri, now the Bnei Yeshiva have a problem with Rav, who says, Holchem b'mamnach ha'arov, and it's a mekartos, and here we turn to the Memvav Amud Beis. When is Rav arguing with Shmuel? The e leko l'shtalumi minei. If we're talking about a scenario in which the mocher doesn't have the mos to return to the lokeach, he's already spent those mos, or they disappeared. Now the lokeach returns the shor to the mocher according to Rav, and he's going to lose his mos. Is lishkarei l'sara bezuzei? If all that the mocher has left in his possessions, in his estate, to collect this money that he, so to speak, ripped off the lokeach, now he has to return that money, is the shor itself, then according to Rav, he's going to collect the shor. The lokech is not going to give back the shor. He'll have to take the shor to the market and sell it for its value to get his money back. The Amri Inchi, like people say, it's a sort of idiomatic phrase, Mimore Rash Vasach Pare Ifra. From the very person who owes you money, you can collect his nechasim. And again, even though the nechasim are very like bad, so to speak, that's subin, but you know what, that's what he has, and that's what he's going to collect, and he'll have to take all these subin, you know, sell feathers for pillows in the market, and that's what he's going to get. But he owes you money, and that's how you collect your chov. So it comes out now, and this is the Gemara's problem, that whether you're like Rav or you're like Shmuel, the din basically is that the shor remains in the possession of lokeach. According to Rav, that's Bataris Piron. He's collecting his money back that he paid for it, although the mekach itself is batel. According to Shmuel, the mekach is kayam, but that's the reason he holds on to the shor, because the purchase of the shor was absolutely valid. Lo tzricha, but rather you have to say that the machlok shin Rav and Shmuel is the ika lishtalume minei, that the mocher, in fact, has plenty of mos, and the lokeach could collect those mos, and that's exactly what he does. Rav says, "Areza mekachtos, zil basaruba veruba dinshi l'radya hu dizavni." The argument of the lokeach is a very solid one. Most people, when they buy a shor, they buy it for purposes of charisha, and therefore he has rights to collect his money back. Ushmuel Omar, Yachol Sheyomala, the mocher has the right to say the lokeach l'shchita machartiv l'cha, v'lo az linan basarubu, we don't rely on rov. Does Shmuel mean to indicate that the Torah doesn't rely on Rov? Says Shmuel, ki az lin in basur, when does the Torah say rely on Rov be'isura, in Isav Heter? Avol b'mamona, when there's an issue of finances, lo az lin in basuru, but we don't rely on Rov to take money out of the yad of the muhsak, ela motzim chavero, olav haraya. And we've once discussed in the past, what's the source for Rov in the Torah, and is it relevant specifically to Isav Heter? And the answer is yes. The classical case of Rov is, of course, what we call Ruba Disa Kaman, and we look at the stores in town, and we see where the majority is. Or in the case of Sanhedrin, where we're deciding. In Ruba de Lesa Kaman, well, that seems to span all bounds and apply to all cases, whether it's Dine Isa Veheter or Dine Mominus. Comes along Shmuel and he says, well, whatever Rov you come up with, that's not enough to be Motzi Mamon. So, for example, if I say that I paid you up, and even though the loan was a 30-day loan, I paid you prematurely. So we have halacha eino de porea tog zmano. A person is not porea es chov before the zman, the termination of the time, comes. And here we seem to be motzi mamon michezkoso based on a rov. We're going to have to really work very hard to understand how Shmuel could defend this position, this principle of ein adam porea tog zmano. And we're going to have to assume that the chazaka here shifts because since he borrowed the money, and nobody denies that, that already creates a chazaka that he has to pay the money, and therefore he's not muchzak on the chov itself. Tanya nami hachi, the Gemara now brings a support for this premise of Rabbi Yehuda that enochinami, the Mishnah, reflects the shita of sumchus, but the chacham would say amotzim chal varaya. Shor shenoga sapora v'nimtza ubra b'tzida v'yeni yodea im ad shalom nogcha yolda im nogcha yolda mishali chatzi nezik lepora revia nezik lavlad divrei sumchus v'chachamim omrim hamotzi mechavero all of harai. So it's explicit in the brisa that what we saw in our Mishnah reflects the shita of sumchus, but we should emphasize that the Chachomim disagree. Hamotzi mechavel of haraya. Omar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani minayin lemotzi mechavel of haraya. What's the source for this principle in the Torah of hamotzi mechavel of haraya? Mi bal dvarim yikash aleim. This is a pasuk in Shmos Chavdalid at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and it means that somebody who has a taina against his friend he has to bring a raya. Yigash aleim, he has to bring a raya for his claim against his friend. And how do we know that the word yigash means a taina? How do we know the word yigash means a raya? That yigash aleim means he comes forward to Bezdin with his raya. Yagish raya aleim. That when it says yagish, it means he brings his raya. Maskif la Rav Ashi. Halamali Krah, why do I need a pasuk for Motzim Chavel Varaya? He doesn't understand the very premise of the Gemara's question. And why Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani had to answer that question? Svarahu. There's a simple logic. Even Lahavdil in secular law and civil law is possession is 9/10 of the law. And the Gemara gives a mashal on this. The Koyev Le Keiv Ha'azal Be'asya. If a person is hurting, he goes to the hospital, he goes to the Rofe, and he knocks on the Rofe's door, he gets an appointment. The Rofe is not going to come to him. So too, Bezdin is not going to take something out of the Adam Muchsak. The Tovah has to show, with clear-cut evidence, that his Tviyah is so strong and so clear, he's got two Edom to support him, that he deserves to take out the money. But in the absence of any sort of evidence, why would Bezdin allow to even dream or contemplate of taking money out of its Chazakah? Ella, but rather, Krah, Lichter of Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua. This pasuk that you're quoting from Parshas Mishpat has nothing to do with Amotzi Mechavel of Araya, but it's rather to support the principle formulated by Rav Nachman. The Omar of Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, Minayin She'ein Nizkokim El Litovea Tchila, She'nemar Mi Bal Dvarim Yigash Aleihem, Yagish Dvarav Aleihem. So let's give an example. Reuven is the plaintiff and Shmuel is the defendant. Reuven claims that Shimon owes him money. Shimon claims, on the other hand, that Reuven has money of his in his possession. Maybe because Reuven grabbed some money out of his possession, out of Shimon's possession, in order to guarantee his collateral for payment of the loan. Or maybe he claims that Reuven has collateral and I want to get back my collateral, my mashka. And according to the argument of Shimon, the Nitba, well, guess what? He doesn't have to pay Reuven. Reuven's holding on to his collateral. Oh, so what happens here? First and foremost, Bezin deals with the tviya of Reuven. Reuven came forward with a claim. He's the plaintiff. He's suing for payment of a chov. And now Shimon comes to Bezin, and Reuven and Shimon are there in Bezin. Bezin's going to have to first determine if Shimon has to pay. Then Shimon wants to say, well, you know what, Reuven's holding on to my possessions as a collateral, then let him prove that with a different tviya. But right now the tviya is on the chov. Shimon, you took the money? Yes. Did you pay back the money? No. Fartik, that's the end of the story. And this is derived from Mi Bal Dvarim Yigash Aleihem, Rav Nachman's B'dayik from this pasuk, that when it says Yigash, it means Yigash Dvarav Aleihem LeBezdin. Reuven is the Tovea, he's the Bal Dvarim, he's Magish Tchilas Dvarav LeBezdin. Bezdin takes the money out of Shimon's pocket, makes sure that Reuven gets reimbursed, and then afterwards, Shimon wants to be Tovea Reuven because he's holding on to his possessions. Let him bring Edim and undermine the psak that we just ruled in favor of Reuven to collect his chov. Amri, the Gemara says at this point that Nardoi have something to say about this. There is an exception to the rule. Pa'amim shenizkakim l'nitba tchila. There are situations where Shimon the nitba, because Reuven is being Tovea Shimon, can press his claim first, because otherwise he's going to lose a tremendous amount of money. V'hechi dami, what is such a scenario? Because zile nichse, you know, the fluctuations in the market conditions, and at this particular moment in time, there's a tremendous sale. You know, the sochrim, the middlemen, are interested in buying whatever they can get their hands on, and they want to buy something from Shimon, and they're willing to pay an exorbitant amount, an unusual amount. Now, if he can't get back his mashkon from Reuven, he's going to take a tremendous loss. Because until he pays back Reuven on the first claim, and then he reestablishes tefi against Reuven for the collateral and so forth and so on, in the meantime, these sochrim, this day of market is gone, and he can no longer sell this mashkon or whatever it is. We have another situation where many people see that Bezdin is taking money out of Shimon and awarding it to Reuven. Who's going to want to buy? Who's going to want to buy anything from Shimon? Let's say, for example, Shimon is selling real estate. Who's going to buy his real estate? You see that he owes money, and he's not paying up his chovos. Bezin has to intervene in order to make sure that he collects. Who knows what the story is with his karka? So what do? These people were interested. They expressed an interest in his real estate and his property. They're going to reduce the price. I'm not going to pay you that. They realize that Shimon is in a tough state. Nobody's going to want to buy from Shimon. In these situations, Bezin is niskakin tchila taina Shimon. They're not going to allow Reuven to collect from Shimon until after Reuven clarifies this whole issue about whether he grabbed some of the possessions of Shimon, whether he has a mashkin of Shimon. We don't want to allow Shimon to suffer such a tremendous financial loss. I just want to mention, we're going to close the shiur now, that Tosas Dira Maskel She'ein offers a different interpretation of this sugya, based on a sugya later on Tzadi Aleph, which is called Ein Nostman Zman L'Chavolos, that if a person was chovel b'chavero, and the tovea, the nechbal, comes to collect damages and sue this chovel, then the chovel says, you know what, I have edim that for some reason I'm potter. Says halacha called ein nosnin zman l'chavolos. That if there are edim to testify on behalf of the nechbal, that there was a chavola, then the chovel has to pay immediately. if he wants to be sosa the din and he has edim, so he'll bring edim later. But on the first stage, Reuven is tovea Shimon because Shimon was chovel bo. No matter what, if Shimon claims counterclaims, you know, I have other claims against Reuven, etc., etc. First, Bezdin will paskin like Tainus Reuven, and Shimon has to pay for the chavola because Reuven has edim on the chavola. That's immediate, and ain nosnin zman lichavos. Okay, we'll stop here.